It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the investigations of the Wisconsin Watch newsroom as their founders announce retirement. But first, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about optimism.
We all learn lessons from our parents: how to cook a traditional family meal, how to have compassion, or how to play an instrument. For Dr. R.F. Ahmed of Madison, his parents taught him about optimism. The writer and cardiologist shares this poem about that lesson.
The Optimist, June 2013, dedicated to my mother, Ismat Bano, and father, Abdul Majid, for teaching me optimism. Tough economic times, wars, famine, tsunamis, global meltdown, moral and ethical dehiscence. So is the glass half full or half empty? Enough going on to sap the energies, to drain the enthusiasm. Enough going on to cloud common sense. But wait, it refuses to be a pessimist. It believes in the human will, the human resilience, the human rebound. It believes in the human race to stand up and deliver. Every human being to be counted and ask, how can it better another life? How can it make proud Mother Earth? How can it first do no harm? It is the Good Samaritan. It is the human spirit. It is a dreaming child. The question is, can it become I, we, us yet again?
Dr. R.F. Ahmed shared that writing about optimism, which he wrote in honor of his parents. After recording his poem, he told me a bit more about them.
My mom was a homemaker, and my father was a civil servant. It's interesting, I watched them live optimism. She had cancer, breast cancer, in the 1980s. And it was diagnosed late, and I watched her live her life for years fighting that disease, and with great optimism. It never reflected upon me that she was so sick. And then I saw my father. As an individual, I think he is the most transformed individual I have seen, who rose from the lowest ranks of civil service and kept educating himself till he reached the highest ranks. I have not seen a transformation that wide in one person in their lifetime. So I saw a lot of optimism in their living, and that rubbed off of me.
So why do you think it's important to be an optimist?
For our present and for our future. Just like my parents were optimistic through their struggles for me, I believe, like the piece talks about, a dreaming child, which is a great example of optimism, and I once was. I also believe that we hurt our better future when our policies as adults hurt the children, be it the wars or famine or disease or gun violence. And I sometimes envy about a world where we can make policies and we can agree to act upon things which are good for the children everywhere.
How do you pass optimism onto your children?
So I say two things. One, I can't control what comes at me, but I can control how I respond to it. And two, I'm a cardiologist. I know what the science says about optimism, and which is it is critical for mental and physical well-being and for fighting disease. There's also another concept, first do no harm. Being a good Samaritan is great, but sometimes the best thing to do is to first do no harm. This is something we live off in our medical world. That is also a point I wanted to bring up.
Dr. R.F. Ahmed is a writer and cardiologist from Madison. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As the investigative journalists who co-founded the newsroom Wisconsin Watch retire, we explore their high-impact projects along with views on accountability and transparency. You can join in along the way, call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dee Hall is former managing editor of Wisconsin Watch. Andy Hall, Dee's spouse, is co-founder at large now of the nonprofit newsroom. They founded in 2009 in their family's basement, and they've collaborated with Wisconsin Public Radio on projects over the years. Dee and Andy, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having us.
Well, congratulations on your retirement and what you've accomplished through Wisconsin Watch. Editor and publisher, the organization says it's become one of the most successful nonprofit news sites in the country. And Andy, why step down and turn the leadership over to a new generation? Why now?
Well, I'm, moving it ahead rapidly in my own aging process, mm-hmm. My own maturation process, let's call it. I'm 64, turning 65 early next year. The average tenure for an executive director nationwide in nonprofit organizations is about 5 years. So thanks to all the support from Dee and many, many other people, I've tripled that average. But it's a very intense experience to found and lead an organization. I've been responsible for the news and business operations during that time since I was hired as the first employee in January of 2009. And Dee and I feel that with my own retirement being on the horizon, it just makes sense for both of us to step out of this organization that we have created and led and give the new leadership team opportunities like we've had to shape Wisconsin Watch and continue to adapt to changing conditions and you know, continue to find new ways to serve the people of Wisconsin.
Dee, you know, going back to your roots, 2009 is the end of the Great Recession. Financial crisis also taking a toll in the media industry that was trying to transition to an online model and make it financially viable. What was it like launching in that environment?
Well, first of all, we let Andy launch it because I needed to stay at my longtime job as a reporter at the Wisconsin State Journal. We had two children entering college. And so we made the decision for me to stay doing the work I had been doing at the Wisconsin State Journal and have Andy go ahead and get the center started. So that was what it was like. We knew that, this venture was, a question mark. We didn't know if it would work. Mm. We didn't know if we would line up more than the initial funding. And so we took a cautious approach. And so I stayed at the State Journal actually for an additional 6 years before joining Wisconsin Watch full time in 2015.
That leads us to, Andy, the number of nonprofit news organizations growing by 17% last year, according to Neiman Lab. What are nonprofit newsrooms able to accomplish that traditional newspaper models cannot?
Well, yeah, I think, it's journalism is good. Journalism is good journalism, whether it's produced by a for-profit or a nonprofit news organization. But in the nonprofit sphere, we have some benefits that you may not have in for-profit journalism. Any excess money that comes in, it simply stays with the organization. It doesn't go out to compensate shareholders or big bonuses for executives, things like that. So it can be a very efficient way of accomplishing a public good. Because the nonprofit sector is relatively young, at least in terms of it being a large nonprofit sector in journalism, we're free to experiment, adapt. It's a very collaborative environment, and I'm very happy to say, increasingly, our friends at in for-profit media are some of our best collaborators. A lot of those old boundaries are crumbling as we all recognize the urgency of our work in informing the public and strengthening democracy. So we've cast aside, in many cases, competitive concerns in order to find better ways to serve the public while still competing in some cases on breaking stories and scoops, but recognizing there's also a very high calling to serve the public and dig up stories that we can't do in many cases on our own, but by joining forces we can.
Andy and Dee Hall with us. They're retiring from the nonprofit news organization they founded, Wisconsin Watch. You can call in with a question, share a comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here as we explore the impact of Wisconsin Watch, the nonprofit news and training organization that is based on the UW-Madison campus. Its co-founders, Andy and Dee Hall, retiring. You can share what's on your mind about in-depth reporting that is significant to Wisconsin. Call in with your question, add your comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Well, Dee, we're going to dig into your archives now. And one of the first big stories that Wisconsin Watch broke was the alleged altercation between Wisconsin Supreme Court Justices David Prosser and Walsh Bradley. Prosser was accused of grabbing Bradley by the neck, an accusation that Prosser has denied. Tell us about this story and how you went about it.
So this is a good one where I'm going to do a story pass to Andy because I had not started with the center yet. I was hearing secondhand how it was coming forward, but I'll let Andy answer that question.
Andy, go ahead. Yes. Oh, Andy, are you there? Oh, I think we're having some technical difficulties there with Andy. So, Dee, while we get Andy back on the line here, let's turn to Proud Boys, which I know you had such a hand in.
Yes.
And we're going to hear a clip from a collaboration that Wisconsin Watch did with WPR's To the Best of Our Knowledge. This is from a 2017 report on the Proud Boys and the growth of white nationalistic men's groups. And this is journalist Alexandra Hall, who is, of course, not related to you, interviewing the Proud Boys founder Gavin McInnes.
The left is obsessed with Nazis, and everything might be racist. Everything might be white supremacy.
You know, I'm just asking what the group believes, and then you went into what you're not.
Right, because I know you're from NPR, and I know you have a liberal bent here, and with your background, I tend to spend a disproportionate amount of time averting the white power allegation.
Dee, what impact did this report have?
Well, it was so interesting because when we first broke the story, the Proud Boys weren't all that well known. But as Alex did more and more investigating, she came across some very concerning sort of tactics by the group, you know, some violence, both people attacking the Proud Boys and the Proud Boys attacking others. And it was a very misogynistic group. And the impact was that we kind of pulled back the veil a little bit on them. Later on, of course, they became among the instigators at the January 6th riot,
We're
having a little bit of technical difficulty here. I think we've got an open mic there as we get Andy Hall back on. So I'm sorry, Dee. I just want to focus in on when you look at the state of masculinity in America and white nationalists now, what did this story kind of, what is the relevance of this story 6 years later and how has it held up?
Well, I think if you look at the January 6th riots, you can see the relevance of the story about the Proud Boys. I mean, they were right in the middle of that. Mm. And, you know, they, at the time we did the story, they were portraying themselves as just some kind of male drinking club. But a lot of the undertones of what they had to say were very, very disturbing. And Alex herself was basically harassed by some of the Proud Boys during her attempts to set up interviews with them. But we made the decision to have another reporter go along with her for an in-person interview as a safety measure. But also that allowed her to just get these really unfiltered and kind of disturbing views at an early time when a lot of people didn't know who the Proud Boys were. So I think it was influential in the sense that it put the Proud Boys on people's radar. And later they did become prominent instigators of the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol.
And in the piece, the Proud Boys piece includes some inflammatory language that the group members used when a female reporter was arranging an interview. Why did that encounter become part of the story?
We decided to make it part of the story. We talked with Alex about it, about whether this should become part of the story, whether she mm-hmm. wanted us, whether she wanted to stop reporting, whether she would like us to intervene in some fashion. And we decided this was a perfect illustration of what their message was. Their message was women stay home, have babies, get married. You know, you don't need to be out in the workforce. I mean, it's a very retro view and a very obnoxious one. And so, yeah, there were some very strange things that they said to her, but we decided to just let it roll because it was a perfect illustration of their actual views.
We have the co-founders of Wisconsin Watch, Dee and Andy Hall, with us set to retire as we talk about the work of investigative reporting over the years. And you can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. So Andy Hall, I think we have you now by phone a little bit better to connection here. I want you to take us back to this altercation between former Supreme Court Justice David Prosser and Anne Walsh Bradley and what occurred during that and what you were able to report.
Yeah, we were collaborating on that piece with WPR. Bill Leaders had just moved on to the Wisconsin Watch staff, having moved over from Isthmus. We got a tip that there had, in fact, been this physical altercation. One justice had put his hands on the neck of another justice. We had trouble believing that. Dee and I, we were actually driving our family and our little camping trailer on the interstate down to southern Indiana when this started to come in over the phone. And I remember Dee couldn't believe what she thought she was hearing from me on my end of the telephone line. So we actually had to pull out the road for a while just to get our thoughts together, and ended up reporting a lot of that from a campground working with the WPR staff and Bill Leaders as our new Wisconsin Watch reporter. And it was an early example of how neither organization could have produced that piece all on its own, but working together and using some very careful investigative reporting techniques to ascertain the accuracy of our information, we became the first news organizations to break that story, which ultimately became global news and, of course, was then the subject of investigations here in Wisconsin. And we were proud of our role in helping bring that to light because many of the people involved did not want it to surface.
How did publishing it, a controversial story, how did that change the profile of Wisconsin Watch?
Yeah, I think it helped alert many people to the fact that we were here and that we were capable of taking on major stories. Even though we've always had a relatively small staff, our focus has always been on the production of investigative stories. The most difficult pieces require a high level of skill and also frequently involve some level of risk. So I think it helped put us on the map As time went on, other stories did too. Other controversies have, and each one, I think, has shown the resiliency of the organization and the value that is created for the people of Wisconsin.
Co-founders of the nonpartisan nonprofit investigative news outlet Wisconsin Watch. That's Andy Hall. There we have Dee Hall as well. They're retiring as we examine the path forward for in-depth news and this newsroom. You can be part of the discussion at any point. Call in with a question or a comment, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Founded as the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, now its name is Wisconsin Watch, a decorated newsroom tallying up more than 140 awards over the years. As our co-founders Dee and Andy Hall retire, we look at the work involved in producing investigative projects. And you can ask your question, share a comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's take a call. Steve is here from Sun Prairie. Steve, hi, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to get the guest comment on, you know, we see a lot of organizations that claim to be nonpartisan and just investigative, and it's just a facade of objectivity, such as NPR is one, even Wisconsin Watch. Wondering what the guest position is on someone like Jessica McBride, who runs Wisconsin Right Now, one of the people, and the investigative reporting that they do that organizations such as the NPR will not cover. Wondering what the thoughts are.
Thanks, Steve. Andy, you first.
Okay, sure. Thank you. And thanks for the question, Steve. Here's how I would answer that. Nonpartisanship means that a news organization is dedicated to covering the news through a wide variety of perspectives and giving voice to people from people to people across the spectrum without favoring a particular ideological orientation. So that's certainly what we practice at Wisconsin Watch. We also try, if a particular source doesn't choose to be interviewed, we also try to let our readers know that within the text of the story that organization or that source did not respond to our inquiries or chose not to comment. We also attempt to include some context, just drawing upon information that's available from other sources to make that to help make their views as clear as we can if they won't be interviewed for that story. Mm-hmm. So we're not out, nonpartisan news organizations are not out to prove that people on the left or on the right or in the middle are right or wrong. We're steered by the facts in how we present our findings, and we try to be as transparent as possible about where we get that information, and we fact check that information before we put it into the story.
Dee, what comes up for you as former managing editor?
Well, so first of all, the organization he mentioned, Wisconsin Right Now, signals we're going to look at things from a conservative perspective, and that's fine. You know, people can look at it from whatever perspective, but to say that that is an objective organization or somehow a fairer organization and that people like us and NPR or WPR are somehow biased is sort of an opposite land. But, you know, that said, we have done stories very recently that really took the Evers administration to task. For example, during the height of the COVID pandemic, there was a lot of problems with the unemployment system generally and specifically toward people with disabilities, that they were not able to qualify for the special pandemic unemployment. And we did some hard-hitting stories there, and it prompted the Evers administration to reverse course and to stop and or to start giving special pandemic relief to people who were seeking unemployment compensation. So, I mean, if you come from the right or the left, you're just very unlikely to do that kind of story. I mean, we're accused of left bias, and yet we saw a problem that was affecting thousands of people, and so we wrote about it. And as it turned out, the people in charge were Democrats, and so that's just the way it goes. The people are in charge are the ones who are being scrutinized, and in Wisconsin, as far as the legislature and the governor is concerned, for much of the recent history, it's been Republicans and conservatives who are in charge. So they are naturally the targets of scrutiny because they're running things.
And through the scrutiny, you're publishing journalism that may be, perceived harsh or criticize politicians and leaders. How accommodating are public officials to questions and record requests from your reporters?
Well, they're required to answer the records request under the law, but I will say that agencies, even under the Evers administration, often drag their heels, or they say they're overwhelmed, they've got too much going on, they don't want to give interviews, they want to just send you a statement, they will only take questions written in advance and no follow-up questions. And this has gone across Democratic and Republican administrations in Wisconsin and, of course, nationwide. And so this is just, in my opinion, a very pernicious trend that infects both political parties, which is the trying to control information in a way that does not allow journalists to fully shed light on important issues. So that's our perspective on things, is we don't really care who is withholding the records or who is not commenting. They will be called out for doing that, regardless of party.
Andy, what is your read on the situation around Sunshine in Wisconsin? How transparent and accessible is Wisconsin government, in your view?
It's not as transparent as it used to be. I agree with Dee, like, that's bad. And it's not just that it's, irritates journalists. This is public information that's been generated at public expense. And then it's concealed from the public by people in power. Dee and I are both active with the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, which does a lot of great work to try to foster government openness and to celebrate instances when officials or members of the public or members of the journalism world are successful in using records and open meetings to reveal those truths. But it's a never-ending struggle, tensions between the people in power and the public and journalists who want to find out what's really happening and what the impacts of the policies are. That's why we're very grateful for all the public support, as is the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, for these efforts. We're often, underfunded compared to those who are trying to conceal the truth. It takes a lot of dedicated people to keep that information flowing.
Talking about Wisconsin Watch, if you're just joining us, the nonprofit news organization, its co-founders, Dee and Andy Hall, retiring. You can join in with your questions, your comments about investigative reporting and its future. 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Annalisa in Green Bay. Hi, Annalisa.
Good morning. Listening to this, I'm just reminded, as a longtime listener of WPR, that John Nichols predicted the decline in the availability of local news. And I'm just happy to see that these people are picking this up at Wisconsin Watch and making this information available to us, because it's critical for voters. So I'll just take your responses off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Annalisa, and John Nichols, author, and certainly longtime commentator as well on politics. Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for that call, Annalisa, and we're really excited at Wisconsin Watch to be part of a collaborative effort in the Fox Valley, Green Bay area. It's called the New News Lab, standing for the Northeast Wisconsin News Lab. And this has been supported by Microsoft, as well as the Fox Valley and Green Bay Community Foundations, the Green Bay Packers Foundation, a family fund. They have supported a consortium of six news organizations. Some of us are for-profit, some of us are nonprofit, some are local, some are statewide. WPR is a member of New News Lab, so is the Appleton Post-Crescent, the Green Bay Press-Gazette, the Press-Times in Green Bay, and then also Fox Valley 365. So we're looking for these opportunities to marshal more resources from corporations, from individuals, from foundations, from members of the public to support this kind of work. And we, as a group of six news partners, meet on a regular basis to plan out our coverage, figure out ways to collaborate to make the best possible use of the resources that we are being provided. We've produced dozens of high-impact stories over the past couple of years, and we're currently working on a project called Families Matter that's examining challenges facing families in Northeast Wisconsin and statewide. So there are a lot of things happening out there to try to counteract the decline in capacity of local news organizations, we're grateful for all the help that we get along the way.
Dee, I want to turn. Go ahead, Dee. Go ahead.
I was just gonna add, beyond that collaboration, every story that Wisconsin Watch produces is distributed to the editors of Wisconsin and beyond. So any news organization, can news outlet, news website, newspaper, radio station, can publish our stuff for free. And that's been a part of our model from the start, and it continues. The result is hundreds of news organizations pick up our content every single year, and we have millions of viewers, listeners, readers. And so I'm pleased to have a tiny little part in helping local news become stronger, because they do have access to our content.
The co-founders at large of the nonprofit Investigative News, Wisconsin Watch, with us. Dee Hall there and Andy Hall with us, announcing their retirement. We're looking back through their archives and the future of investigative journalism. You can share your question, your comment. Call in now at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The nonprofit news outlet Wisconsin Watch, it collaborates with news organizations like Wisconsin Public Radio to boost the quality and quantity of investigative reporting in Wisconsin and training the next generation of journalists on this work. Its co-founders, Andy and Dee Hall, retiring, and you can join in the conversation. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dee, let's turn to the Open and Shut podcast, the 7-episode investigative series followed two district attorneys in the Fox Valley. And Wisconsin Watch's investigative reporter Phoebe Petrovic reported, produced, and hosted Open and Shut. And here's Phoebe talking to Arizona State University law professor Valina Beattie about what absolute immunity allows state prosecutors to do.
Prosecutors have gotten away with a lot because of absolute immunity.
Cases where they falsified the evidence, cases where they coerced witnesses, cases where they solicited perjured testimony, where they withheld exculpatory evidence, and when they introduced evidence they knew that police had illegally seized, they introduced that evidence at trial.
So, Dee, the Open Shut podcast involved getting a lot of long sealed transcripts of closed door hearings released by a judge. Why was it important to review these cases of prosecutors all these years later?
So for one reason is that some of the people who say they were wrongfully convicted are still incarcerated as we speak, decades later. The reason that we decided to examine these two particular prosecutors is because there were so many examples in their careers of the types of conduct that is allowed, even if it's against the rules. There are just very few consequences for prosecutors when they bend the rules. And that's why we wanted to highlight these two careers. I mean, like most stories, people will understand them better when they're told through the experience of real people. And so that's why we decided to look at these two. And frankly, I had been looking at some of these prosecutors, the two that we featured, for over 20 years as a reporter at the Wisconsin State Journal, kind of started back in the early, I guess it was 02-ish, when Vince Biskupic was running for attorney general, and we found out about these secret deals he was doing with people. Some of them were totally innocent and some were guilty, and he would let them avoid charges secretly through these secret deals that he was striking. And so we found out about that just before the 02 election. And then he did not win that election for attorney general. But then beyond that, I thought, well, what else was going on up there? And that led me into multiple years of investigating. So Phoebe basically picked up where I left off and looked at some of these same cases, some other cases that I was not even aware of. And then we used each story to kind of illustrate the leeway and the power that prosecutors have that's largely unchecked to this day.
That, you know, how much latitude, how much freedom do prosecutors have with accepting or rejecting evidence? And then what about destroying evidence?
Well, all of that is supposed to be against the law and against the rules. But, you know, what we found is that it can happen with relative impunity. It's often called harmless error, but it may or may not be harmless in terms of the outcome of the case. So, I've just always been astounded by the level of authority and power that prosecutors have, and the very, very few instances across the country, not just here, in which prosecutors are actually held accountable for things that are clearly wrong, that are clearly against the various and sundry rules and case and opinions that have been issued over the years.
Phoebe was picking up reporting that you had started perhaps decades earlier or a decade earlier. You're training these journalism students as well, new people in the field. What is the most important thing you try to teach them about the profession?
Well, we've had over 80 interns and fellows go through our doors over the years. And that's our biggest legacy, is those people have fanned out and they are telling great stories all over the country and in other parts of the world. Phoebe, we were lucky enough to retain her, and she's a full-time reporter with us now. She started out as a Report for America Corps member, and she was at WPR just before that as a fellow. That's our biggest legacy. What do we teach them? We teach them how to get at the truth, how to dig out information that various powerful interests or individuals don't want you to get, using the public records law, using interviewing techniques, searches of the web, other searches, developing sources, who are the sources who might have the information, who might be willing to talk to you and give it to you. So those are the kinds of things that we teach. And, it's just gratifying to see so many of them off onto these just wonderful careers where they're continuing this truth telling and this great investigative journalism.
Let's bring in another call. Randy in Madison. Randy, what's your question?
Good morning. Well, first, let me just say, despite what you just said, congratulations on your retirement, and you're going to be leaving a big void. A couple of quick questions. I vaguely remember the David Prosser situation. I had forgotten that he had attacked a female judge. I was wondering what happened to him.
Randy, thank you. Yes, Andy Hall, go ahead.
Dee actually has done more work on that story, so I'll defer to my better half to answer that one more thoroughly.
Yeah, so at the time it happened, I had not joined Wisconsin Watch yet, but I was still at the Wisconsin State Journal, and I covered a lot of the fallout from that. What happened was, this is such an unusual situation. Six of the seven justices were in the room when, and David Prosser did acknowledge placing his hands on her neck. So I'm going to say that, because that, when you read through the Dane County Sheriff's Office reports, he does acknowledge that. So what happened was, everyone in the room either was a participant or a witness. That left only one justice who didn't happen to be in the room. And so there was never any disciplinary action taken against Justice Prosser. And so that's the way it ended. I mean, there was a police investigation in which, you know, Justice Prosser did say, yes, I felt, the way he said it, something like, I felt my hands around her neck. It was, but nothing came of it, really. He did not get disciplined in any way. He stayed on the bench for a while. And yeah, it was, I think it was an illustration of the limits of our disciplinary system when it comes to the state Supreme Court, because they are the final arbiters. Mm. But then when they have to arbitrate their own cases, sometimes they can just fail to act because of conflicts of interest and recusals. And that's what happened in this case. That it happened with the Gabelman case. There were some allegations involving former Justice Gabelman that also resulted in no discipline because, you know, people were just recused themselves and then the court was unable to act.
Andy, as we close here, Randy has a follow-up question on what is the Wisconsin Watch business model and how do you keep it vibrant in the future?
Boy, that is the biggest challenge, even harder, I think, than producing world-class investigative journalism is how to pay for it. The business model is we are supported through the generosity of individuals and foundations and companies. Currently, about 75% of the funding comes from foundations, about 20% from individuals, and the remainder from sponsorships and event revenue and earned income. And we are attempting increasingly to not only produce investigative journalism, but also help to rebuild local news across Wisconsin. We have this partnership over in Milwaukee with Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service, which is housed at Marquette University, and the News 414 Project. The business model is to help the public understand the importance and the urgency of this work and what journalism does to inform the public.
And it is such a pleasure to talk with you about this work, and all the best in retirement. That is Andy Hall, co-founder at large, co-founded Wisconsin Watch, Dee Hall, former managing editor, founded in their family basement in 2009. Rest is history. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.